is up, everybody? Welcome to this week's episode of the Dense Pixels Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Brad, joined by my co-host, Micah.
Hey.
So we took last week off because I haven't played anything new and there's really no news to speak of. So, which is good because we have actual news this week. The biggest news, of course, being that it looks like the runway is finally clear for this Microsoft Activision deal to close. That is because a judge in U.S. court ruled against the FTC, who was trying to put a temporary injunction on the closing of the Microsoft Activision merger. They put a close on this last week. The original deadline was to close the merger for the two parties was today, but it is being reported now by Bloomberg that it is highly likely that they will extend that deadline out a couple of months, because now that the FTC has been defeated in court, the UK CMA, which was the only regulatory agency that had blocked the deal originally, is now saying, oh, well, you know, in the wake of this new ruling, like, we're happy to come back to the negotiating table to talk to you, Microsoft and Activision, to see how we can get this deal done. Kind of really, I think, underlining my point that I made a couple weeks ago, that I think the CMA was really hoping that the FTC would prevail as well, so that they didn't look like the only assholes in the room. So there's a couple different things to talk about here. The first one I want to talk about was the interesting tact that the FTC took, and the judge actually kind of admonished them for this in their ruling, by saying that the FTC was arguing more on the merits of protecting Sony from the deal closing as opposed to protecting U.S. consumers, which is the actual ambit of the department. And I was just curious to see if you had gotten to follow any of that, what your thoughts are about the FTC's tact on basically making this all about Call of Duty in their arguments against the merger closing.
Yeah, this is not how you this is not how you separate, you know, big corporations from aligning, because another corporation can't get a part of the deal or whatever, right? Like, that, it's a weird play. And obviously, and it didn't work. Like, it seems like a very, very poor argument. You know what I mean? Like, not for the consumer, but like, no, we want this other major corporation to be able to take money from the consumer. Like, but that's, you know, that's what this country is, right? Like,
yeah. Well, and that's kind of what a difficulty is about this new FTC, is that, you know, for so long that organization has been essentially a corporate rubber stamp about kind of letting mergers through, that they're kind of having to go back to the drawing board. And a lot of people were like, you know, dunking on the FTC, like a lot of people in gamers that wanted this deal to close were like, yeah, fuck you, FTC, this or the other thing. No, you want the FTC to contest these. Like even if they're not going to win, like you want to put these corporate mergers under some sort of scrutiny. Like even though, you know, they were not successful this time, it's at least good that they had the fight. Now, I wish that the fight had been, you know, a bit catered, like the direction that it was catered was a little bit different, because we've said for months now that this Call of Duty approach that Sony had been taking to fight the acquisition was idiotic. You know, the fact that even if they did make Call of Duty exclusive, like, it's still not a good standpoint to fight this on. But I don't know, like it's just interesting that the FTC also took that tact as well.
Like, isn't the point of the federal government, like, to look out for the people?
Well, it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be. But again, the FTC has been, you know, such a feckless organization for a long time. And when Lina Khan came in, she wanted to give the agency some teeth. And of course, like, this is the first high profile, you know, big acquisition that they've been faced with. But you can't, you know, you can't win until you lose a little bit, and like, you got to resharpen the agency up. So again, I'm super glad that the FTC took such a strong line, but they just picked like a really bad example to kind of fight against. Kids.
Yeah, and look, and you're 100% right. All these people who are like, nanny, nanny, boo, boo, I get, you know, Starfield. Like, I don't understand why you, I will never understand why people, like, I don't understand why people of a certain age, you know, outside of middle school, will throw their identity behind a company. Look, I'm not going to pretend that, like, I wasn't a Nintendo guy growing up, but that's because I didn't have a Genesis and I wanted one, right? I coveted it and I didn't have one. And I was like, well, mine's better. So, bleh, because I wanted to justify someone, my parents' purchase, right? So, yeah, I don't understand them. I don't understand that mentality. You're right. Look, I don't necessarily have, I'm not going to be hurt that this thing is happening. But you're right. At least the fight did happen. Yeah.
And again, in fact, I'm actually quite, like corporate consolidation being bad aside, I'm actually quite pleased that this agreement seems to now be headed towards closure, because I think that Activision or Microsoft will run Activision better than Activision is running Activision, if only from a human resources standpoint, because of all the news stories that we've seen coming out of that company. Over the last several years in terms of how workers are treated and harassment and things of that nature. So like that's my prime, you know, thing that I'm feeling happy about with this. I mean, obviously from a competition and from a, you know, from a gamer, you know, consumer friendliness standpoint, probably not a great idea. Like, you know, it's not great for consumers that, you know, now more games will potentially be behind, an exclusivity agreement, Call of Duty notwithstanding. Like Call of Duty, you know, is not going to be one of those games, but, you know, Bethesda titles are going to be in that. Not that, I mean, Bethesda's already Microsoft, but you could definitely see, you know, future Blizzard titles potentially being Microsoft exclusives. You know, you could potentially see future other Activision titles that come out that are Microsoft exclusive, and that's not good for gamers. I mean, Sony certainly sees the writing on the wall as well, because just days after this temporary injunction was struck down, all of a sudden, here comes Phil Spencer. We are pleased to announce that Microsoft and PlayStation have signed a binding agreement to keep Call of Duty on PlayStation following the acquisition of Activision Blizzard. So, of course, as soon as the fight is lost, Sony agrees to the deal that they were always going to agree to, this 10-year agreement of Call of Duty being on PlayStation consoles. And I'm pretty sure that that doesn't mean that, you know, Xbox won't potentially put, you know, new maps and things and other exclusives on Xbox and not on PlayStation. But you know, this was always going to happen. This was always going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause money talks and right. Bullshit walks. Like, the fuck out of here.
And here's the thing, like for Sony, this is also fine because you now see like you now have this agreement. And so you now know that potentially 10 years down the road, there is a time where Call of Duty could be pulled from PlayStation. So now you have a 10-year lead time to potentially develop a competitor or something that can replace those you know people leaving your console, if it even does. We also don't know in 10 years if Call of Duty will still be Call of Duty. I mean, that game has had an unprecedented run of success and relevancy in the industry, especially for something that releases essentially annually. As Call of Duty does. I mean, it's been, you know, among the top played games in the world for 15 years now running. That's two lifetimes in the game industry. So, you know, we don't know what the next 10 years will portend. It's very possible that Call of Duty will be an undesirable franchise to have in 10 years. And then this is all a moot point at the end of the day. So,
yeah.
Like I said, I'm glad that we will hopefully stop hearing about this. Microsoft has suspended their litigation that they had pending against the CMA so that they could go back to the negotiating table. I'm sure that they will find an agreement, that is equally palatable for both, Microsoft and the CMA, to make this deal close. And so I'm pretty sure come late August, we will be hearing about this, this deal closing. If I were Microsoft, I would time it to have this news of the merger closing like literally a week before Starfield comes out and just kind of keep the good vibes running for a while.
Let's talk about the stuff that we normally talk about around here. Go to nespizzles.com/fans. When you do, you're going to invite it to our Discord. Our Discord has a bunch of stuff in it. You can talk about racing. Is that what it's called? Is that, or is that like a, or is there a European term for it? Like football is
soccer. Right? No, it's racing. I mean, most people just refer to it as F1 because that's primarily what we're talking about in that thread is F1. So,
or you can talk about F1 racing. You can talk about, or any kind of racing. You know. If somebody bring up some NASCAR stuff, and then
there's the occasional IndyCar conversation in that group as well. So
you can talk about wrestling. There's a lot of wrestling talk. you can talk about games and gaming news. You can talk about what you're playing. You can throw up your gamer tag and make some new friends to play with. All on our Discord at densepixels.com/fans, and you can drop us a line in the post office, and we will adjudicate your problems, answer your questions, or laugh at your comments there at densepixels.com/fans. At youtube.com/densepixels, you can subscribe and hit the bell and hit always or all notifications or whatever it is. Whatever it is that the cool YouTubers do tell you to do at youtube.com/densepixels. I am blue themed and Brad is Oriole themed his orange and black. I don't follow baseball, but I will support the Orioles no matter what. If I did, I hear from Jack that they're doing well. Are they doing well?
They're doing excellent right now.
Wow.
They are in prime position to secure a playoff spot this year as long as the wheels don't fall off in the second half of the season. So,
oh my God, it's only halfway done.
I mean, a little more than halfway done. But no, they just lost last night to the Dodgers. But prior to that, they had an 8-game winning streak. Bookending either end of the All-Star break. So, and I'm actually going to the game. There's a game tomorrow, so I'll be headed to that to watch them finish the series against the Dodgers.
All right. Well, it's time to dust off my Orioles hat that I bought when Jack and I went to a game years ago. I've won it once, and that's time. I guess it's time to dust it off. Subscribe to all of our shows. The Nerdpocalypse, which is back. Black on Black Cinema, which is back. We'll be recording an episode tomorrow on The Blackening, which is a horror or satire comedy. That is way better than I thought it would be. Coming Distractions and the weekly preview episode of the Look Forward Political Podcast. And if that's not enough, go to densepixels.com/premium. And for $5 a month or $50 for the year, get access to the back catalog of all of our amazing content, including the airing of grievances, which I was speaking with Terrence the other day. He said, I went back and started listening to old episodes of the airing of grievances, and I quote, "You niggas are wild." So, if you want to hear what Terrence is talking about, listen to airing of grievances. No time to bleed. The men with the golden tongues. You know what? I said it. We're gonna do it. We have a tentative date for Metal Gear Solid 3: Snake Eater coming up on the Men with the Golden Tongues Upstage Conversation and the full uncut uncircumcised episode of the Look Forward Political Podcast at densepixels.com/premium.
Oh my God. Hellboy to coin the full episode of Look Forward. So Michael, what you been playing over these last couple of weeks?
I've been playing two things. I've been playing. So this is, I canceled Game Pass this month, but I still, it still lasts throughout July. So I decided to play Exo Primal.
Oh,
Game Pass game.
I'm very interested to hear your take on this because I'm curious. I'm definitely curious to check out Exo Primal.
So I didn't really know too much about it. I just figured it was like Dino Crisis, but not. Mm-hmm. And it's a hero shooter, and you jump into like different mechs that do different things, right? There's your all around average mech that does decent damage and has decent survivability, but you know, it's not great at anything, but it's not bad at anything. There's your tank mech that uses like a provoke to get the dinosaurs over to you and has various other abilities. There's your cleric mech, for lack of a better term. It's the mech that can heal you and can cast spells. There's your glass cannon mech, which is like a black mage, and there are like two more mechs. So it's a hero shooter. You can jump in and out of different mechs as you please, and you're fighting dinosaurs because an evil AI is telling you that you need to do it for its amusement. And
isn't it PvEvP?
It's PvEvP, where you are on a team, mm-hmm. and you are playing against another team, and you all have the same objectives in the same map, but you are trying to complete the objectives as fast as you possibly can. So it's my team and your team, right? Mm-hmm. We each have to meet at a spot, and we have to kill a certain amount of dinosaurs. Now, we're not in the same instance, mm-hmm. right? Like you can't attack me, and I can't attack you yet, right? Mm-hmm. So we have to run to a place, kill a bunch of dinosaurs, run to another place, kill a group of different dinosaurs, run to a third place, kill a big dinosaur, and then we have to. It's an escort mission where you have to escort this thing to another spot. And that's where the PvE comes in, the direct PvE comes in, where you can destroy the other team to slow them down. You can destroy the thing that you're carrying. Then they have to all kind of huddle up and wait for it to regen. It's really fun.
So you know what you've just described, essentially.
It sounds like Overwatch, right?
No. It's Gambit from Destiny.
It is Gambit from Destiny. The best part of Destiny for me.
Yeah.
I loved Gambit. It's really fun.
Interesting.
It's really fun. I don't know if it's like, I want to buy this fun, but if you've got Game Pass, you just throw it on and, you know, get a couple of matches in and... It's super fun, man. I like that game mode. I like Gambit. Gambit was literally the best part of Destiny for me.
I'm actually probably just gonna download Exoprimal while we're on the.
You should give it a shot. Yeah, you really should.
It's free. So
it's free, and you know, it's super cheesy. You know what I mean? It's like it's that perfect Capcom cheese, right?
Right.
Where these characters are like. There's a story, I guess, and the characters are kind of over the top, and the rogue AI that you're fighting is just evil for no reason, right? Like, and you're fighting dinosaurs for no reason.
Well, I also heard like the PvE parts before the two teams meet are kind of useless, insofar as the only thing that they do is they benefit the team who finishes first, I guess, because they get to start working on the PvP objective before the other team does. So essentially it's like American Gladiators, where like all the other events didn't matter, like they just serve to give you the head start on the Eliminator.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it's pretty much. I mean, that's pretty much it. Like you get your three warm-up rounds or whatever, mm-hmm. right? But then you're ready for the main event.
But that's cool though, because like having a game mode like that where two teams could potentially be on unequal footing is what allows for like those cool like those dramatic like comeback moments and shit like that. Like when one team like pulls it out and that feels awesome when you're on the team that's pulling it out. So
yeah, there was one where we were winning, right? Like mm-hmm. we were, and the game tells you are completing your objectives faster than the enemy team, right? And I'm like, oh, we got this, we got it, right? And all of a sudden, you are completing the objectives slower than the enemy team, and I'm like, oh shit, like we gotta hurry up. And then it tells you the enemy team has reached the eliminator, right? Mm-hmm. Like they've reached the eliminator. So I'm like, oh shit. Like, and then everyone, all these strangers, right, on this team, we start talking like, oh shit, like we gotta do this. We gotta do this, right? Like, and we start calling things out and stuff like that. And then we make it. And then we realize, oh shit, we could kill the other team at this point, mm-hmm. and we can destroy the thing that you got to escort. So some of us were on destroy the MacGuffin duty. Some of us were destroy the other team duty. We got overmatched because I played this the morning it came out, and there was already people in like samurai mech suits that were just chopping people up all over the place. And I'm just like, God damn. Like we made a valiant effort because we were in the lead, and then we lost it, then we got it and lost it. And then we were doing really bad, but then we made a valiant comeback and we almost made it. But, Rocky loses his first fight.
So. That just goes to show you like, the level of this like 6-year heater that Capcom has basically been on, where they can release this game, like everyone remembers what their reaction was when they first saw Exo Primal, and even in the lead up the lead up to it, kind of like the, like, man, this game looks like it like it is a stereotypical this is an ass game, but it's Capcom, so you never know. And of course, like, it comes out and I think the reviews are pretty decent for it. You know, it's not like a holy shit, you must play Exo Primal, but it's just like, man, like, it's a lot better than we thought this was going to be, especially considering we knew basically nothing about it going
this
into
is, it. So. It has no business being as fun as it is. It really does have no business being as fun as it is. And it's the perfect game for like a Game Pass where it's just like, I don't feel the need to grind this game, mm-hmm. but if I want to kill, if I got 20 minutes to kill, I'll pop on Exo Primal, kill some dinosaurs, and have a good time. Like it's way better than it should be. I've also been playing more Final Fantasy. I know I've been hard on that game, but I don't hate it. But I do feel the need to criticize it. This game gets way better. Not way better. It gets way more interesting.
Okay.
It gets way more interesting. The problem is you got to get through the first 15 to 20 hours for it to get like really interesting.
I don't have that kind of time. Yeah.
Right. Like that's a no go for certain people, man. And I'm not mad at you because like you tell somebody you got to play. I'm according to the PlayStation, I'm 76% through the main missions,
mm-hmm.
but you tell somebody you got to play and I've got like maybe 50 hours into it, close to it, something like that. You tell somebody you got to play 15 to 20 hours of a video game before it starts getting interesting. That's a no go. But the combat really opens up when you mix and match your mm-hmm. different icon abilities with your icon standard ability, right? Like Titan's default ability is the ability to block, but you can put like, you know, Bahamut's abilities on there if you want, if you, you know, max it out and stuff like that. So it really gets, combat is flowing. And once you get into a rhythm of breaking a stagger gauge to weaken the enemy, to get some free hits in, I can break a stagger gauge without the enemy like touching me. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like it's combat has always been decent in that game, and it gets better. The story gets way more interesting when it actually kicks into gear. See, the thing with this game is the peaks are really high. They're really high. Like, oh my God, this is amazing. I am engrossed into this. But then the valleys are just like, after you do something amazing, right? After you fight an icon in space, mm-hmm. right? Then you got to go back and do some like fetch quests, and they're like mandatory fetch quests. They're not even like the side quests. Some of the stuff is like mandatory fetch quests, and it's like, God damn it, man! Like, I really want to get into like, I wish the valleys weren't so low,
mm-hmm.
but I'm gonna finish this game because I'm into the story now. I want to see what the hell happens. Basically, if you are familiar with Game of Thrones, the Night King is the main bad guy. And the Night King has the ability to turn anything it wants into White Walkers. And in order to defeat the Night King, you have to destroy a bunch of crystals. But the crystals are the things that sustain life throughout the world as they know it, right? Like, it's not imperative that these things exist, but they make life a whole hell of a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
And the Night King wants Jon Snow because Jon Snow has the ability to take the power of these, siphon the power of these icons.
Has the defensive plot armor around him.
Yeah, and the Night King wants that. The Night King is like M. Bison, and he sees Jon Snow as a doll that he could put his body in to keep life going. I'm into it. The main character, Jon Snow, I call him Jon Snow. That's a bit of an insult to Clive because, like, Clive really opens up because he kind of has to, because the character with all the charisma in the game is not around, and you have to. So Clive has to kind of be that guy, but his companion Jill is just like, she's still just kind of a wet blanket who kind of takes herself a little too seriously. There's not a lot of characters who are like fun. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's if you can get through the first 20 hours of the game, then you're
so it's a bummer because, like, you know, I've got other stuff that I'm playing right now. Like, I'd love to be able to fit Final Fantasy in there, but you know, I'm about to talk about, you know, one of the games I've been playing recently, and I'm still playing a lot of other stuff, and kind of interested to check out Baldur's Gate now because that's getting a lot of buzz.
I'm getting into it, man. Yeah. I'm already. I want to be a paladin. I want to be a paladin of vengeance.
I've gotten CRPG curious in the last couple of weeks, and the thing is, like, there's one coming out. There's a Warhammer 40K one that's coming out that looks really interesting, but it doesn't have a release date. But like I said, Baldur's Gate 3 is coming out, and it's like the people that get excited about these type of games are like really excited about Baldur's Gate 3. But in the meantime, I've been playing Octopath Traveler 2, which I picked up on sale because it was one of the games on the Steam sale, and I said, this is a good time to do this. And I got to say, so I'm about a dozen hours in, give or take, and I haven't even acquired all of the characters yet. So, like, that's kind of, like, because the game, I feel like it gives you more freedom than the first game did to approach things. Because I don't know if you remember, like, in the first game, like, you kind of had to do everyone's chapter one, and then everyone's chapter two, and then everyone's chapter three. And it was hard to kind of freewheel a little bit. Not the case in this game. Like it really does let you kind of go at the pace that you want to. And tackle the stories that you want to. And that's the other cool thing too, is that so far I've started six of the eight tales. And they're all good. there's no really shitty characters in here. The tales are all pretty intriguing so far. They're a little bit more, they've got a little bit more variety. Some of them are slower burns than others. Some of them, they kind of hit the ground running right away, but they have, like, you know, an inquisitor who's, you know, looking to see this, like, cult that's, you know, rising, that basically is like a Satan worshiping cult that he's trying to snuff out. And, you know, they have the assassin who was kind of taken in from a young age, and she has to, you know, she wants to escape that life, but to do it, she has to track down and kill, like, both of her handlers. Basically, and like that story's been really intriguing so far. And they have a guy who just, like, he's really, like, he's seen poverty happen, and he's a merchant, so, like, one of his missions is to kind of heal the sickness of poverty from around the world. So I haven't really gotten too far into that yet, but that's kind of where his story starts out. Also the tales aren't excessively long. Like, the chapters aren't, like, excessively long, which is cool. They also do, like, combined chapters. So, like, I just started a combined tale with two of the two of the heroes, who are very diametrically opposed, but they have a chapter where they do something together, that kind of interests the both of them. So we'll kind of see where that goes. So that part's been really fun. They have a day-night cycle in the game as well, which the first game did not have. And basically it changes which path action. So each character, instead of having like one path action, they now have two. And it depends like whether you're using day or night that like determines which one you use. That sounds more interesting than it actually is. The problem is that there's a lot of overlap in path actions between characters. They're just called different things. And I guess that they kind of exist to serve the same function, but on just different scales of morality, which, since there's no morality system in the game, it doesn't really matter. It's just like, hey, do you want to steal from this person, you know, items from them, or would you rather charm them, or would you rather pay them for these items? it's just many different ways to tackle the same problem. The other thing that's cool, and you'll have to correct me, Mike, if I can't remember if this was in the first game, but I don't think it was. Every character besides the battle point system, which has returned, now has a latent power that they have in battle. And basically, as you break enemies and as you take damage, this gauge will fill up. And each character's latent power really kind of ties into what they're good at in battle. So, like, Temenos, who's the Inquisitor, his latent power is that when you use it, when you activate it, his attacks will break the enemy's guard, whether or not they're actually weak to that attack style that you're using. So like, that's pretty cool. The latent power for the apothecary is that she can use ingredients without actually consuming them. So like, if you want to make like this really bitchin' ass apothecary concoction without wasting some of your best ingredients, like you can basically do that. And then that combines with the battle points, where, you know, you can, you know, add more ingredients to this one single concoction. So it makes the characters feel a little bit more unique, and those powers don't transfer with learning different jobs. Like, they are specifically unique to that character, so that it kind of makes them play a little bit differently. Other than that, like, it's very much similar to the first game in terms of how the battle system is, in terms of how the overworld map goes. The side quests are still the most kind of involved side quests. Like they're essentially fetch quests, but they require you to travel all over the world, and they don't necessarily hold your hand. Like, you have to figure out how to solve them, which I've always liked and didn't like. Like, I don't like having like a side quest log with like 20 things in it, but I kind of like that they're not just like, hey, go to this part of town and get this thing and bring it back to me and like finish them in 2 seconds sort of thing. So, the first game was good. This game so far seems like a game that has learned from the, not mistakes that the first game made, but just evolved from where the first game was. And I think that that is a good thing. I haven't yet seen how, because supposedly this game does kind of tie all the character stories together in a way that the first game did not. So I haven't yet seen that unfold, because I'm still like only one or two chapters into most character stories. I am 3 chapters into one of their stories. Because also interestingly, one character, when you start their story, you actually play both the first 2 chapters like back to back. You have to, which I thought was a bit interesting. But it also lets you get to his chapter 3 a little bit faster as well. So, music's also still really good, as I would expect. I don't think the themes are as good as the first game, but it's still pretty solid, I would say. So, if you liked the first game but didn't love the first game, you might want to give this one a shot, because like I said, I think that they, you know, improved in every way over the initial game. So
cool.
I don't know if we found a more useless gaming peripheral now than the Resident Evil chainsaw controller, but I think we might have a contender. So there's a haptics company called OWO, or it's OWO. I don't know if I don't know how to pronounce that. But they have a haptic suit that you can use for gaming. And they're debuting it in a tie-in promotion with Assassin's Creed Mirage. And so basically this haptic suit will allow you to, quote, experience multiple different sensations that reflect Assassin's Creed Mirage's protagonist, Basim. That includes impacts of and parkour. It can the suit can mimic 30 different sensations, including axe, insect bites, a severe abdominal wound, and ball, whatever the fuck that's supposed to be.
No, I don't want to experience a severe abdominal wound. What the fuck?
Micah, do you want to experience it for the price of $500 US when this haptic suit comes out?
I don't even want rumble on my controller. I don't want this, man. This is one step closer to the world that Ready Player One described in its book and movie. In that book, the main character wanted to he bought a suit because he stayed in Second Life so long that he wanted to feel every sensation. So he bought a suit that let him feel everything, including like the bad shit. Nah, yo, this doesn't seem. This seems just kind of dumb. I can't imagine it's. It's just dumb. This is just kind of dumb.
You know, I'll give him credit. At least it comes with the game.
Well, I mean, it better. God damn. But I don't want to get this and put it on and play a game where the entire thing is getting stabbed. Like it just doesn't seem.
It also looks like you have to be like a bit fit to wear this thing. Like I don't think they're going to have a size that would fit someone of my proportions. Let's say.
Yeah, man. Like for $500, they better come in. Like it should come in different sizes. For God's sakes.
Yes.
Yeah. No, man. Like I'm looking at this thing. No, you got this thing has pecs built into it, man. Like, nah, this is not gonna work.
I can't wait to see YouTubers buy this and review this. You know they're going to, right? Like they're gonna
of
be,
course they're going
be a
to
class of people that that
they're going to do it. They're gonna do it, and they're gonna do what they always do with like reaction videos and stuff like that. They're gonna go over the top and be like. Oh my God! I feel it. Oh, I feel like I've been stabbed. Like no, it's not. It's not that serious. It's not that serious. Please stop. Please. No. This is. I'm sorry. I'm not even excited for this Assassin's Creed game. This is probably the first.
No. Yeah. Game. Like, I don't know if it's odd to me that people are excited that it's almost like a retro Assassin's Creed. Like they're kind of going backwards. Where this is like the old school style, not like the sprawling RPGs that the last couple have been. Because I think people, I guess, are tired of the RPG formula. So like it's come full circle. They're like, oh, this is too much. It's too long. It's too much game. What happened to the old 40-hour Assassin's Creed that, you know, you could just play around in a relatively small area and just go stabby stabby and do these things. So in our last news story, Xbox Live Gold is dead. Long live Xbox Live Gold. It's not being called that now. It's being called Xbox Game Pass Core. It's going to continue to be $10 a month or $60 for an entire year, which is the same price that Xbox Live Gold has. And it's giving you basically the same benefits that Xbox Live Gold did. It gets you access to the Xbox multiplayer network. It gets you deals and discounts in the Xbox Store. The only thing that is different is that they are getting rid of games with gold, and instead, they're doing it's almost like Game Pass Lite, where there will be 25 titles available for Xbox Live Core members to play anytime. You don't own them, and then they will rotate out which titles are available. They say 2 to 3 times a year. Is when they will add. Oh, well, actually, they're saying that they're going to be adding new titles. So I don't know if that means they're going to take titles away or not. So I would want a little bit of clarification on that. But again, you will not own these. Obviously, anything you own with gold previously, you'll still be able to play as long as you keep this core Game Pass thing available. The titles that are available on day one for this, which is September 14th, is going to be what you would expect. It's basically shit that's all owned by Microsoft, essentially. You know, except oddly, like some newer titles are not on here. So like the Halo Infinite campaign is not on here. There's a couple other things that I'm sure like most of the newer Bethesda games are not available on here. So it is, there still is value in having like actual Game Pass. So I guess this is why they weren't too freaked out when they did raise the price of Game Pass Ultimate, is because they knew that this was coming to replace the original Gold. Micah, do you see, I haven't seen the value proposition of Xbox Live Gold since Game Pass Ultimate came out.
Yeah. I don't see. I mean, for a dollar more, you can get Game Pass, and it's literally everything that you could want. Like,
but no online. Why would they even no online play with just Game Pass? Like, you have to have it. You have that either Core or Ultimate to access the Xbox servers. So,
all right, that's dumb. All right, well then, you know, for $5 more a month, you could just get Ultimate. And you know, if you plan on playing online with people, I don't see why you would spend the, you know, just get Ultimate. And if you're not going to play, like, I got rid of Game Pass because I have not touched my Xbox aside from playing Exo Primal. I cannot tell you the last time I turned on my Xbox, and I'm not going to turn it back on until Starfield comes out. And Starfield is a single player game, so there's no point in me getting Ultimate. But if there is something that's coming out, I'll just hop right back on it. Like, it's not a big deal. But I do not understand why anyone would get anyone Core. The only
people that I could see getting this game is if you just play Call of Duty or you just play FIFA. And you just need to have access to the server, in which case nothing is really changing for you. Like you're keeping the same benefits that you had previously and getting additional small benefits of which you might not even care about because you're just playing the online games that you like to play. That's about the only thing that I can see.
And then even then, just give them an extra $5, man. Like,
broaden your gaming horizons, you know?
Yeah, man. Bit. You get an EA Play membership and all that crap with it. So just,
I gotta say, like, really enjoying Game Pass. Like, there's a lot of stuff that has been on my wish list on Steam that I haven't had to pay for just because it's been available on Game Pass. And I mean, I'm still in the honeymoon of like it's still free for me because I got a 3-month free with a promotion that I had. So, but I'm probably gonna keep the PC Game Pass even past that, just because there is enough stuff on there that I'm in, and well, obviously Starfield too. Like, that's a given. But also this makes sense to me. Like, Gold really couldn't exist anymore in the current environment with the focus on Game Pass. So I'm happy that they finally rebranded it. It took probably 2 years too long.
Yeah, I know people like to think that having options makes things seem, you know, like, wow, look at the value because we've got all these options. Part of that is a scam, right? Mm-hmm. Part of that is just to make you think you're getting a deal when in actuality, like, you're kind of getting shafted. I would rather they just offer PC Game Pass or Ultimate.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like, it's one of the perks of having a PC is you get to save an extra $5, right? But just offer Ultimate. Core and console Game Pass don't really seem like good value propositions for me.
I almost think that you're right. Like, I almost think they could just offer Ultimate, don't do the price increase and have an annual option as well.
Yeah.
And I think that you more than make up for the people that are just subscribed to Core or just regular Game Pass. So
if they had an annual option, I would do it and forget about it.
Yep. Yep. That's the benefit. Well, as Nintendo got me the other day, like, in my mind, I was like, do I need to keep the Nintendo one? No, like, probably not. Like, I'm not really playing online with Nintendo. And then it just happened. I'm like, well, it happened already, so too late to stop that.
Oh well. You know?
So there you go.
Go to densepixels.com for all of your Amazon shopping needs.
Slash Amazon.
Oh, yeah. Go to densepixels.com Go to densepixels.com and then go to densepixels.com/Amazon for all of your Amazon needs. When you do, you will be taken to Amazon's storefront. You will buy whatever you want to buy, and then we get a kickback. You get what you want. It's a win, and Amazon gets to continue to be a gigantic corporation. It's a win-win. Win for everyone. I went to densepixels.com/Amazon because I need to buy my wife a new watch, a new iWatch, because when it comes to technology, my wife is like a cave person. She would just bang it until it works or until it falls apart. And indeed, it fell apart. The face of the watch came off, and then there's wires in between. And I'm like, how did you do this? And she's like, I don't know. And I'm like, oh, so that's where my son gets it from.
Maybe you could also get her a silicone case for her Apple Watch.
Yeah, because I'm not buying another one after this one. But you can get a wide variety of Apple Watches. You don't have to go to Apple's storefront. You don't need all that. You can get yourself a nice renewed watch, because that's what I'm going to do, because I'm not going to spend $300 on a watch that's probably going to get broken again. You can just get this renewed watch for $169. and you can only get it at densepixels.com/Amazon.
We go to the Dense Pixels post office, where you can submit questions every week by joining our Discord at densepixels.com/fans, just like Cam did. That's asked, is Brad Pitt coming for the crazy stunt gods throne by driving in an actual F1 race for his F1 movie, or is Tom Cruise still number one? No one will beat Tom Cruise when it comes for insane stunts.
Yeah, I watched that. I saw Mission Impossible Rogue AI the other day, and it's Mission Impossible 7. I forget, the Dead Reckoning is the name of it. I call it Rogue AI because the villain in the movie is a rogue AI, and it's a fun movie, and Tom Cruise is doing a bunch of stunts, and this is how far video games have come. Maybe this stunt was done in a movie beforehand.
I heard about this,
but I've never seen it before. I've only seen it in one place, and that's Uncharted 2, the beginning of Uncharted 2, where they have where Nathan Cruz has to climb up a falling train. It is damn near shot for shot.
I'd find it hard to believe that somebody hadn't played Uncharted 2 that designed that stunt. So
I refuse to believe that someone just plucked that out of their imagination. Yeah. No, they got it from Uncharted 2. We have come full circle. Movies have inspired video games, which have inspired movies now. And and Tom Cruise is there, and he's doing all that shit, and it's a fun movie, and Tom Cruise is stuntman god. If there was any hope of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences recognizing stunt work, Tom Cruise will probably be the first winner of said award.
Agreed, and again, like, with F1, like, you couldn't do it well, Cam, but like, you could drive a Formula One race car, like with enough learning. I'm sure Brad Pitt has learned enough to be able to drive that car. But like, you or I could do that. It would just be, you know, very difficult. Whereas like, I suppose they could strap me to the side of a plane while it takes off, but I feel like that would be a little bit different than driving a car. So. Daniel's asking about some settings that we're playing with. Mike, we'll take these one at a time because they go from least controversial up to just like sicko behavior. So the first one, controller vibration on or off?
Off.
I prefer on, but not for certain games. Fighting games specifically, I will not turn it on. Subtitles on or off?
I usually keep subtitles on.
I keep them on as well because I am an old man, and I don't always hear everything that they're saying. Brightness all the way up or recommended by the game. I use the game recommendation. When you have a decent monitor, it benefits you to use the game's recommended brightness settings.
Yeah, I can't imagine why anyone would. I could see why someone might tweak it, but like turn it up? No.
And finally, Micah, y-axis inverted or no?
Am I flying a plane? Am I flying a plane? Like, that's the question. Am I flying a plane?
And even if so, I'm not actually flying the plane. Like, so. Like,
right. No. I don't invert the y-axis. The last time I did was when I tried Microsoft Flight Simulator because it was on Game Pass, and it felt kind of weird to me. But it felt right, but it felt weird, right? Like, it felt like, oh yeah, this is supposed to happen, but no, I don't. No, kind of. I've seen people invert the x-axis.
That's really weird.
That doesn't make any sense. Those people are the devil. Is what I'm saying.
Yeah, but like, even people that play y-axis inverted are like real sickos. In 2023, like, come on, guys. Like, we've gotten used to cardinal direction, like normal controls that, you know.
I feel like people who invert the, I feel like the percentage of people who invert the y-axis are like the percentage of left-handed people.
I think it's lower. Honestly, like, I think it's significantly lower. Like left-handedness is like a 1 out of 9 sort of condition. Like, there's no way that 1 out of 9 gamers invert the y-axis.
No, that can't be. Yeah. That can't be. That's why the Leftorium went out of business.
And, right? And and especially if you play on console, like, it's one thing if you play on PC, like, if you use mouse and keyboard, okay, I can sort of understand it. But on console, no, absolutely not.
And see, I'm the reverse. I could understand it if you're playing on console.
Oh, really?
But not PC. Yeah, no, but not PC.
Yeah, PC I could see it, but console absolutely not.
The only reason I see it on console is because you literally have a joystick in your hand, right? Okay. Like, the analog stick is like a joystick, and I can kind of the brain can process that for me.
I see.
But if I'm using a mouse, I just point to where I want to go with the mouse.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I'll give one exception. If you're an actual pilot, I understand why you would invert your y-axis. Outside of that, weirdos. Yeah. Nerdy Gamer asks, how do you feel about EA's announcement that they'll be collabing with Marvel Games to publish and develop a AAA Black Panther game via their Cliffhanger Game Studio? I feel as though our Marvel game should be in the more than capable hands of Insomniac and maybe let Crystal Dynamics help a little bit. EA's going to fuck this up. I love the Star Wars Jedi games, but I'm not trying to see Wakanda's environmental features pop in as I'm running up to things. I feel like we talked about this several months ago when it was first rumored. It was finally announced that EA is indeed developing a Black Panther game. Look, I think it's completely fair to distrust EA until proven otherwise with something like this. So.
Yeah, I'm gonna hold out hope, but I get it. I'm not mad that you are apprehensive.
Yeah.
The only issue with I could see Insomniac doing something like it, but we can't give Insomniac all the comic book games, right? Like, we can't.
No, they have to develop other things.
yeah. Let them get that Spider-Man game out. Let them get Wolverine out, and then let them do what they want to do. And Crystal Dynamics, I mean, I like those Tomb Raider games, but last time they had a comic book game, wasn't really received all that well.
That's true. Let's see. Johnny says, or actually, no, Film Wander first says, in honor of the retirement of Naughty Dog former president Evan Wells, what is your favorite franchise from the studio? I think me and Mike would both be in agreement that Uncharted is
it's Uncharted.
The favorite one. Yeah.
It's Uncharted.
Yeah, we are definitely not Last of Us, nor Crash Bandicoot stands on this podcast. Johnny says, with 2023 hitting the halfway mark, what are some of your favorites so far this year?
Two of them came out in June.
yeah, that's right. I mean, like, yeah, it literally is the Diablo, Street Fighter, and for Micah, Final Fantasy trifecta, for sure. I would also say Super Mega Baseball 4 is up there for me.
I liked Go ahead. I liked that Star Wars game enough. I liked it enough to finish it, but I don't know if I'll go back to it.
Tape to Tape might end up in my top 10. That's that hockey roguelike that I talked about a couple of months ago that came out this year. Let's see what else we got here. Sorry, I'm just going through my recents to see what's in my library to make sure I'm not missing anything crazy. Let's see here. What else has come out that I've played? I mean, Octopath will be in my top 10, I would imagine, by the time the year is out for sure. That's pretty much where I'm at. I've been playing a lot of backlog stuff this year too. But yeah, as far as new games, like if I had like my early game of the year contender, it's probably Diablo 4. Is the Clubhouse
Leader. For right now, yeah. I also really like Midnight Suns. I really like that game. Mm-hmm. I wasn't expecting to like that game, and I really did. Other than that, when did God of War come out?
God of War was earlier this year.
Okay, God of War was amazeballs. It's been a good year, and it's going to keep being a good year. This might be the best year in a very, very long time.
Yeah, this is the year that I thought 2022 was going to be, until all the games that I thought that were going to make 2022 one of the best years ever got delayed into 2023. So,
yeah, like a bunch of different genres are represented, and they're represented very, very well.
Is Tears of the Kingdom going to be a top three for you, do you think, this year?
No, okay. No. And I know that's blasphemous for some people, but it's just not. I like Tears of the Kingdom, but I'm not. I'm not putting down Street Fighter to play Tears of the Kingdom.
Okay.
And the way people are talking about Baldur's Gate, I've been looking for an RPG in the vein of Dragon Age Origins for a very, very long time. And I want to get this game. I don't know if my PC will be able to do this game any justice.
Your PlayStation could eventually when it comes out on there, which is
serious. Yeah. So I'm probably going to get it on PlayStation, but the PC version of Dragon Age Origins is one of my favorite games ever.
Mm-hmm.
And this looks like it's going to have that like top down, turn based, interesting story. Like I'm getting really excited for that game.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll see. But this year has been incredible so far, and it looks like it's gonna end really well too.
Right. Cam also says, with two black wrestlers, Willow Nightingale and Ricky Starks, winning AEW's Owen Hart Cup over the weekend, how proud do you think former Nation of Domination member Owen Hart would be?
I feel like, have you seen that meme of the black person whipping white slaves in the cotton field?
Like MLK.
And then there's an MLK like image in the sky. You replace that image with Owen Hart, and there you go. I think that's the pride that Owen Hart would have.
Oh my goodness. What is your favorite cooperative video game? Insomniac's Fuse is number one for T-Wash, he says. That's an interesting pull.
Fuse.
So, it's Diablo, because I can play it with my wife and just have a good time and fuck around. So that's that for me. The Diablo series would be the one.
I don't know if I have a favorite co-op game. I tried playing video games with my wife once, and the only thing I could get her to play was Mario Kart. And my wife is very combative. She doesn't want to be on my team. She wants to. We went over a friend's house and we played some game that she had, where you had these marbles, you had to kind of like go around this like loop and then back home. But if you land on a marble, you can like send that marble, you could reset that marble.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's what me and my wife ended up doing, was we just ended up trying to stomp on each other and send each other back home, because, because that's the type of combative relationship that we have when it comes to games. So,
Mad Coco G says, following in the footsteps of No Man's Sky, with Cyberpunk 2077 basically being a wholly different game now that it was on release, is the new norm for big games that whiff the initial release to spend a couple of years starting over? It's a really interesting question, because I think for every one No Man's Sky or every one Cyberpunk, and by the way, like Cyberpunk for the first time ever has an overall very positive rating on Steam. That's one of the things that's notable about their kind of resurgence. For every one of those, I feel like there's at least two or three like Battleborns, which are games that just like whiff and then just fade off into obscurity. And I think it's, I don't know that there's like a template for this, right? Because like Hello Games and CD Projekt Red are two diametrically different studios. Like Hello Games is a very small independent studio. CD Projekt Red, this enormous AAA game studio. So both of them are going to approach this problem differently. I think there's also a sunk cost fallacy or a loss aversion fallacy that you may run into occasionally with studios that try to polish a turd, essentially. I think that if you truly know that the bones are there for a good video game and you just need more time to get that game to the surface, and if you can weather the bad PR, then I think that you can do it. I don't think that Redfall is going to be one of those games, to use an example of one that could potentially benefit from that, but I don't think that Redfall is going to end up getting there, because I don't think that the bones of that game are as strong. Like CD Projekt, like Cyberpunk, even though it landed flat, like what was flat about it? What was buggy as shit? You can fix bugs. You know what I mean? Like that's why that game sucked. Why would No Man's Sky fall flat on release? What was missing promised features? Well, you can incorporate those over time, and it's a live service game, and it's not like you're asking people to pay a monthly subscription fee. I think the ultimate example of this is Final Fantasy XIV, and that took a huge leap of faith from a publisher standpoint to basically implode the game and rebuild it from the ground up, which I don't think a lot of publishers would have the guts to do. So it's interesting. It's an interesting question. I don't think this is going to be the new norm by any stretch of the imagination, because I think that if this becomes commonplace enough, then you will see a lot of gamers not purchase these games at launch, and then they won't have the opportunity to kind of do that because the capital investment won't be there on the front side. Because remember also that, you know, No Man's Sky and Cyberpunk both, despite their troubles, sold exceptionally well on release. So that kind of built in some grace. I don't know. What do you think about this?
These particular studios also have one iron in the fire at a time. Mm-hmm. Like they are. CD Projekt Red was the Witcher studio, and now it's the Cyberpunk studio, and that's the game that they are focused on. Hello Games has No Man's Sky, and that's it. When you get a flop like Redfall, Arcane is just going to do something else, mm-hmm. Because they can cut their losses. When you get an Anthem, mm-hmm. BioWare's just going to do something else, like, because they can cut their losses. But those two studios, they kind of need this to work. I feel like it was easier for CD Projekt Red because, like you said, they already have an incredibly loyal built-in fan base. Mm-hmm. The game already sold incredibly well, so it gave them a cushion to kind of push through. And like you said, the game itself was fine. Mm-hmm. Like it was structurally sound. I played that game twice. I enjoyed it. But I had a better playthrough, the second time I played it after all the updates and stuff like that.
And I'm even waiting for the updates that are coming with the new right. DLC, like the stuff that's coming to the base game that the DLC patch is bringing with it. So before I play it, finally.
Yeah. This is not something that's gonna you lose credibility even more so than studios already have. You lose a lot of credibility if you pump out a shitty game and then go back and fix it. And you do that too many times, people start losing faith.
Yep. I will say that what those two games can teach you Is that if I'm like over the moon hype for a game before it comes out, run away. Because apparently I have really bad, really bad predictive radar for these things. Because No Man's Sky and Cyberpunk 2077, you can go back and listen to prior episodes. Probably the two games I was most hyped about in advance of their launch that I can think of. I've learned to temper my expectations a little bit thanks to those two games. You think I would have learned after No Man's Sky, but no. I was over the moon for Cyberpunk until reviews started rolling out. Finally, Justin asks, what is one current or last-gen video game that you keep going back to after you finish it?
Spider-Man.
So, for me, it's tough because, like, most of the games that I go back to on a pretty consistent basis are designed to be that way. Like, they're games like Slay the Spire or, you know, like Monster Hunter is a new one now, or Gran Turismo, that don't have a true end. Like, I've seen the credits roll in those games, but you don't ever finish playing them, truly. There aren't a ton of modern single-player games that I, modern story, like, you know, single-playthrough games that I return to. Most of that exists for me in kind of, in like, the SNES era. So, like, you know, I'll go back to, you know, Super Mario World a bunch. I'll go back to Yoshi's Island 2 a bunch, Donkey Kong Country 2, Earthbound I return to pretty frequently, Final Fantasy 6 I return to pretty frequently. So, like, there's a lot of games that I came up with in my childhood that I return to. But funnily enough, modern games, usually once I've played them through once, I very rarely return to those games, mostly because of the time investment involved. Like, I can do a playthrough of Donkey Kong 2 in, like, 5-6 hours. It takes me considerably longer to do that for, you know, like Ghost of Tsushima would be another like 30 plus hour playthrough. So,
yeah.
So I don't have too many of those games. All great questions. Thank you guys for submitting them and for the last minute submissions, because we did record a little early today over our normal time. So again, if you are not a member of our Discord, you can join it by going to densepixels.com/fans. You should subscribe to this show wherever you download fine podcasts, including Apple and Google Podcasts. You can subscribe to us on YouTube by going to youtube.com/densepixels and seeing this episode come out, a new podcast episode every single week. And again, look forward to a new episode of The Men with the Golden Tongues as we review Metal Gear Solid 3 Snake Eater, a game that is much more bonkers than I remember it being, considering I haven't played it through all the way since it released almost 20 years ago, which is something that hurts my brain a little bit. So that is all for this week. Thank you guys very much for watching and listening, and we will see you all the next time.
See ya.